Midsummer Murders, Season 1, Episode 1. The Killings at Badger's Drift. Adapted from the novel by Carolyn Graham by Anthony Horowitz. Scene 1, exterior, Badger's Drift, day. Late afternoon in the most beautiful of England.
You're listening to Midsummer Murders Mayhem, the official podcast for the hit global television series Midsummer Murders. I'm your host, Nikki Chapman. Now, you may know me from the television series Escape to the Country, the RHS Chelsea Flower Show, or perhaps for those listening in the UK, BBC Radio 2. But what you might not know is I'm a huge fan of Midsummer Murders, the world's favourite detective series, set in the quaint, beautiful, surprisingly lethal, fortunately fictitious, county of Midsummer. Country life encompasses all sorts of English eccentrics, marvellous village fates, and a remarkably high body count. But we do not fear, for our hero, Inspector Barnaby, has a 100% record in solving all the murders. He is our calm in the storm, and has been for several successful decades.
In this, the very first episode of the podcast, we are focusing on the Midsummer Murders series pilot, The Killings at Badger's Drift. Whilst in the woods to photograph a rare orchid, elderly spinster Emily Simpson witnesses something so traumatising she immediately rushes back to her cottage. Shortly afterwards, there's a knock on her door, and the following morning, her dead body is discovered.
Morning, Tom. Haven't seen you in a while. We only meet when there's a corpse.
How'd she die?
That's easy, broken neck. The question is, did she fall?
Or was she pushed?
With the help of cast, crew, and devoted superfans, I'll be covering some of the most important scenes, discussing the most intriguing characters, and seeing who can spot those cameos. Helping me this week is award-winning Scottish comedian, actor, presenter, and most importantly, die-hard Midsummer Murders enthusiast, Ashley Story.
It is quintessential Midsummer. It's beautiful. It's in one of the best-kept villages in Midsummer, Badger's Drift, where I would like to live. It features murder. It features incest. It features a cute dog. It's perfect.
We'll hear from the wonderful John Nettles about his role as DCI Barnaby.
Out of the blue, Brian Trumay, the producer, turned up and said, "Are you interested in this?" And I said, "What is it?" He said, "It's another detective." I'm afraid. I said, "Oh, no, I don't want to do that. I've done 10 years of Jersey." And I read the books, and I thought they were very, very filmable. And on the back of that, I said, "Oh, yes, thank you very much. I'll do that."
We'll also hear from Emily Mortimer, who, before she headed off to the bright lights of Hollywood, started her career right here on Midsummer Murders.
I'm really nostalgic and sentimental about that part of the world. And so, yes, I think I would consider Midsummer as an option for a county to live in. But I would just have to have John Nettles on speed dial, I guess, in case anything went wrong.
And we'll finish things off with a round of our superfan face-off quiz, hosted by Ashley and featuring contestants from around the globe. I'm going to give you a spoiler alert right off the bat here. In Midsummer Murders Mayhem, we leave no stone unturned, no evidence unchecked. So if you haven't seen the episode in question today, I suggest you do it right now. Ashley, who knew what we were letting ourselves in for when we watched this?
Nikki, I'm so excited to be here to talk about the first episode of Midsummer Murders. Let me blow your mind here. 1997, this episode came out. 13.5 million people tuned in to watch it.
It's such a brilliant, brilliant start.
It was the highest rated single drama of 1997 in the UK. I mean, when we think about all of our friends across the world who enjoy Midsummer, that number must have quadrupled a million times of how many people have now seen The Killings at Badger's Drift. It's great, but also not representative of Great Britain. It's a very weird place, as Badger's Drift. Please don't judge us on it.
Life isn't normally like this.
Well, it starts off and there's the lovely old lady. She's going on her bike. Emily Simpson, they call her an octogenarian, a dignified lady, going off to see if she can find some of her favourite orchids that she's going to mark because there's a competition going on with her and Lucy Bellringer, her next door neighbour. So there she is. She takes herself off into the forest, into the woodland to do some innocent pastime. And then she hears, well, I think the only way I can say it is grunting going along in the foliage.
She hears the slapping of flesh that can only mean one thing, Nikki. And I'm going to say now, if you're in a wooded area and you hear those noises, don't walk towards them.
No.
Walk away.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. And then when I see some naked feet on the screen, they are not attractive feet. I don't know whoever it was at that point, but I'm thinking, I hope his face is a lot better than those feet. So off she goes, shocked, as she cycles back through the village, bumping into everybody. It seems everybody in this village, in Badgersdrift, they spend their time looking out of their doors and their windows.
Well, it's a classic British pastime, peeking through the net curtains at the goings-on of your neighbours. It's something I enjoy, even as a grown adult woman, and the internet exists. If I hear a commotion outside, Nikki, I'm hanging out that window to see what's going on. My nosiness knows no bounds.
Over here in the UK, we often have net curtains. They're sort of like privacy curtains, aren't they? You can see through, they're often lace. But I think it was Coronation Street, which is a well-known soap over here. They said, you know, those net curtains, they don't twitch on their own, you know, because everybody's always at the window, aren't they, having a little look. So poor Emily, distraught from hearing this grunting in the forest, makes her way home. She's spotted by her neighbour, Lucy, and then she goes in and the first murder is committed.
That's right, Nikki. There's been a murder.
Oh, I just love the way you say it. Now, there's a little bit of history with that statement, isn't there? We're going to digress, but just explain to everybody. I'm going to try and do it. A murder. I've got a cold, so it might not come out as well. There's been a murder. Was that good enough?
I think that's amazing, Nikki. I think the cold made it better. I think the phlegm helped with your Scottish intonation.
Everybody in the UK, if anyone ever says murder, they always go into a Scottish accent. But why? Remind us.
Well, it's not because Glasgow's the murder capital of Europe, or used to be. It is, in fact, because of a hit TV show called Taggart, where there was always a murder, and Taggart would walk in front of the camera and say, "There's been a murder." And that's it. It's now synonymous. I've travelled all over the world. I've been to New Zealand, Australia. It doesn't matter where I go. Somebody will stop me and say, "Oh, can you say there's been a murder?" And I have to do it.
That's a very good accent, a very good accent indeed. So there's poor Emily.
Thank you.
On the floor, and Barnaby turns up, and at first of all, the doctor thinks that it's old age, that's why she's died. But Barnaby smells something's not quite right. And Lucy Bellringer, her lovely neighbour and best friend, she definitely smells a rat.
Lucy knows something's afoot, and she points the police officers in the right direction.
I saw Emily come home about 6 o'clock and I knew something was wrong.
How exactly did you know, Miss Bellringer?
Well, she slammed the door for a start. Now, some people close doors and some people slam them. Emily was very much a closer.
Well, is that it?
And she didn't padlock her tricycle. Now, Emily was very particular about this. She was afraid of thieves. We all are these days. But it's no reflection on you, Chief Inspector, but to leave her tricycle like that, she must have been very upset.
Do you have any idea what might have upset her?
No, I told you. The last time I spoke to her, she was about to go into the wood.
Looking for this flower?
The spurred coral root. And it's an orchid, not a flower.
Lovely Troy, who always has a very special place in my heart, is hilarious in this episode. That's the first of the many gaffes that he makes throughout. It's not a flower. It's an orchid. Yeah, it's an orchid.
Now, you've said that Troy has made a couple of gaffes. What is a... Where I come from, a gaffe is where you live. What's a gaffe where you come from?
Oh, yes, it was. Yeah, my own gaffe. Also, a bit of a mistake. You know, he's a little bit clumsy with the wording. So when he's going around, yeah, not quite as subtle as he could be. Political correctness would go a long way with Troy, but he's young. So I'm going to put it down to the youth of today.
It's the indiscretion of youth, but don't worry, I'm sure Costin will do some sensitivity training, and he's got DCI Tom Barnaby to guide him, who, it turns out, is kind of the most sensitive man in Midsummer. I love him.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So off we go then. So the whole village, actually, they're all discussing, aren't they, the murder. They all know how she's been killed as well. It doesn't take long for those drums to be beating around. Everyone seems to have it. And then probably one of my favourite characters appears, Dennis Rainbird, who is the local undertaker, who must be 22 if he's a day, but he is still the local undertaker.
He is a dimpled, handsome, wiry man, one of the most amazing voices. I love listening to him talk, played by Richard Cant.
Do help yourself, Chief Inspector. The clubs are anchovy, salmon spread in the hearts, Marmite spades, and potted meat diamonds.
Phenomenal actor, phenomenal character, so good in fact, and so beloved by the fans of Midsummer that he essentially returns playing his own cousin in a much later episode, just so that people can see him do the same shtick over again, which is amazing.
No.
With, of course, Irish Rainbird, his mum, played by Elizabeth Sprigg. But yes, one of my favourite characters, makes the most disgusting sandwiches ever in the history of television. I lie awake at night with sweats thinking about those anchovy sandwiches.
Oh, the one thing which really made me laugh out loud was, and Barnaby and Troy pick up on this, he's driving a Porsche, which, as we all know, is a very expensive car. Not something you'd expect like a 21-year-old undertaker to be driving, but it's a number plate. RIP1, rest in peace 1. I mean,
John Nettles, when he talked about this episode, said that that number plate tickled him so much.
Yeah. And again, there's some great dialogue going on between the three of them when he's asking what's going on and can he take the body. It's a conversation I'm not going to repeat here, but if you're watching it, you might get the gag.
There's a little naughty bit in it, and I do. I induce you as a Scottish person, go enjoy that. Go enjoy that little naughty bit in that episode of Midsummer Murders that you don't often see in an English television programme.
Well, what can I do for you, Mr. Rainbird?
I was wondering if I could take her, the deceased.
Oh, I'm afraid that won't be possible for a little while.
Oh, so you do suspect some naughtiness. It was her neck, I understand. Who told you that? Oh, come on, everyone knows by now. It's that sort of village. Well, you can't have the body yet. All right, sir? Oh. I see you've got a right constable there.
I was watching that part with my husband and he literally spat his tea across the room when he heard that. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. So we know that Emily Simpson has seen something untoward, but they can't quite work out, Barnaby and Troy, what it is. So they look at the potential culprits and one of them is the local doctor who has recently married, how can I say, a lady of the evening? Is that a polite way of saying it, Ashley?
I think a lady of the night. A lady of the evening just makes it sound like she likes to go to bed early.
Yeah,
I think
it's
the
really
correct
weird
term is a lady of the night.
Because I didn't want to be too rude about her, but Barbara Lessiter is the former lady of the night, not evening, married to Dr. Trevor Lessiter, and the stepdaughter Judith Lessiter is there when they are all, not interrogated, but questioned about where they were the afternoon stroke evening of the murder.
I was Wayne Causton all day yesterday, local hospital.
No, you weren't, Daddy. That was Tuesday.
What?
You go to Causton on Tuesdays and Thursdays. I'm just trying to be helpful.
Yes. You're right. Thank you, Judith. Of course, I was in all day yesterday. I was watching the cricket, a test match.
You're not treating this as murder, are you, Inspector?
We're not ruling anything out, Mrs. Lessiter.
Well, I was in Causton all day yesterday. Shopping. I like shopping. Ask Pookie.
No need to follow my wife, Inspector. Just follow her credit card slips.
God.
Judy! I don't know what's the matter with her at the moment.
It's that boy she's seeing.
Yes. He's an artist, local chap. I can call her back if you like.
No, that's all right. I take it Judy is your stepdaughter, Mrs. Lessiter.
Yes. I'm Trevor's second wife.
You know, I really don't know how we can help you, Inspector.
Oh, I'm his second wife, the way she says it. And of course, the boy they're referring to, the artist, is Michael Lacey. Judith is being painted by him. And this is the first time we sort of really hear about Michael Lacey, and he's pivotal to the whole plot.
He is indeed. He is an orphan who has been brought up in the village with his sister, and looked after by the Lord of the Manor. And he's played by Jonathan Firth, who is the sibling of Colin Firth, who is that famous posh guy.
Who is my neighbour.
No!
My neighbour, yeah. Well, not that close, a couple of roads away, but close enough for me to claim it. Yeah, yeah.
Take your phone, go and find him now.
He does look as good in the flesh. He will forever be my Mr. Darcy coming out of the water in that wet shirt, but we probably need to move on. Michael Lacey is it's an interesting character. Is that a good way to put it?
I mean, he seems like the most icky character in the village, and that's including the Rainbirds. He's very weird. He paints a lot and paints aggressively. And there's nothing worse than a man who paints aggressively. I like Bob Ross. Give me a gentle fella painting a wee cloud. I don't want to see some arty posh boy flinging paint about.
Oh, he's definitely tortured as well, isn't he? Which leads us up nicely to where his sister is. So his sister is Catherine Lacey, soon to be the new wife and, well, I suppose, owner of Tye House. Henry Trace lost his first wife, which we'll come to in a little bit, and she resides mainly there.
That's right. Catherine is to marry Henry. She's much younger than him and was his ward when her parents and Michael's parents died. She doesn't live at Tye Manor right now. She is staying with her brother in the cottage. Do you think that's creepy? Maybe it is. Maybe that's a bit of foreshadowing for what's about to come later on in this episode. But she is engaged to Henry, and Catherine Lacey is played by Emily Mortimer, famous British actress.
She is beautiful, isn't she? She's absolutely stunning. Mm-hmm. And of course, we've got to also mention at this point, Phyllis, sister-in-law of Henry Trace. Phyllis has always lived with them in the house. And in a way, she's been running the house since her sister tragically died in a gun accident when they were all out shooting. So there's a lot going on in that house alone. And Barnaby and Troy, they're not sure. They go, they interview them all, but they can smell something's not quite right within all these people. And Phyllis Cadell is so nervous when she meets Troy and Barnaby.
Oh, I suppose you must think I was quite startled just now. Well, you see, the thing is, I thought you'd come about my car tax. It's been on my conscience now for weeks, and what with the wedding and everything.
Must be a busy time for you, Miss Cadell.
Well, yes, it is. Well, I've looked after the house for 7 years now, Mr.
Barnaby, and this is Sergeant Troy.
7 years, yes. I came with my sister, Bella. And now this. Well, I never thought Henry would marry again, but I do what I can, even if I'm quite worn out.
So that was Phyllis Cadell being a bit nervy round about the police. Interestingly, she's played by an actress called Selena Cadell, so they've just carried over the surname there. She didn't have to remember a second surname. She had that surname. Now, Nikki, you were saying about how Barnaby can sniff out a lie. He knows something's afoot. And I think that we get that set up in this episode for the rest of Midsummer when he's sitting having dinner with Joyce and he says, I know they're lying to me. And Joyce says, well, that's what you do, Tom. You know when people are lying. And that's pretty much who Tom Barnaby is.
Why do I get the feeling that everyone is lying to me?
They always lie to you, Tom, and you always know. That's why you're so good at your job.
That was Jane Wymark making her first appearance as Joyce Barnaby, the phenomenal wife of DCI Tom Barnaby.
In each episode of Midsummer Murders Mayhem, we'll be delving into our archives to hear from some of the people who made the show what it is. This week, to kick off, we've got some really special guests. First off, for the first ever episode, we couldn't not have gone with the main man himself, DCI Tom Barnaby, otherwise known as John Nettles.
The Midsummer Murders, Season 1, Episode 1. The Killings at Badger's Drift. Adapted from the novel by Carolyn Graham by Anthony Horowitz. Scene 1. Exterior, Badger's Drift, day. Late afternoon in the most beautiful of English days.
He was born on October the 11th, 1943, and grew up in the small village of St Austell in Cornwall and attended the University of Southampton. But when did it come about that he was to join the Midsummer Murders family?
Well, I was safely ensconced in the decent obscurity of the classical theatre. I was working at the RSC, you know. and I thought I'd been largely forgotten by television people. Suddenly, out of the blue, Brian Trumay, the producer, turned up and said, "Are you interested in this?" And I said, "What is it?" He said, "It's another detective, I'm afraid." I said, "Oh, no, I don't want to do that. I've done 10 years of Jersey, you know." But yes, he said, "Read the books." And I read the books, and I thought they were lovely. And I thought they were very, very filmable. And on the back of that, I said, "Oh, yes, thank you very much. I'll do that." She'd written a man with dark hair, bushy eyebrows, with digestive problems, rather fat, towards the end of his career, who had to be dragged out of bed, solved the crime.
Although let's not pretend that this show is wholly about murders. The author, Caroline Graham, also had a dab hand at letting the imagination run wild.
There's more blood per square inch of her novels than any other novel I can think of, you know. And they're very savage. But at the same time, you've got this appearance of gentility on the outside. It's a contrast between the two, which I found quite exciting. She had a marvellous notion of sexuality. Not the sanitised sexuality of the television studio, but a real raunchy, dirty sexuality, which is hugely appealing and very, very funny.
It is, and very raunchy. That was the wonderful John Nettles. So, probably leads us on to one of the most cringe-worthy scenes I think I've seen in television in a long, long time. And it is my favourite duo, Dennis Rainbird and Iris Rainbird, his mum. That very strange mother and son relationship. I think you know where I'm going with this one, don't you, Ashley?
Oh, I do. And it's worse than their sandwich selection, Nikki.
Oh, what is it about? Well, we should probably explain.
Spoiler alert. The Rainbirds start having kissy mouth situation after Dennis has dragged up some sort of a rug or blanket, and Iris is very excited indeed, so much so she plants her lips on her own son, and it is possibly...
She holds his face.
Yep, she does.
Don't tell me you got it!
And,
Oh, the rug! Oh, you clever, clever boy! Where did you find it?
In the pond behind the quarry. I saw them throw it in, tied round some stones.
Yes.
How much do you think it's worth?
Think what the police will make of it if their forensic people get hold of it.
They'd have a field day.
Oh, this is the big one, Denny. This is going to make us very, very rich.
Mummy.
Oh, who's a good boy, Denny? Who's a good boy?
I mean, you'd think she was talking to a dog the way she's talking to, but it's not. Just have her son's face in her hands. Have that image as she's saying that. Yeah. When they're chatting to Barnaby and Troy, they let slip, on purpose, can I just add, that Bella, the first wife of Henry Trace, when she was fatally shot while out with a shooting party, was always a little bit mysterious. They like to plant that seed.
Yeah, they do. And they're not doing it to be helpful. They're just stirring up stuff around the village because they're troublemakers who kiss on the lips and make disgusting sandwiches. And also, there's some weird... I got really hyperfixated on the weird side dishes that they served with the sandwiches, Nikki. There was a strange sombrero-shaped cake that I am desperate to know. What was that? They don't touch it. They don't reference it.
She was eating one, wasn't she? It looked like a boat or something with a sail. There she is eating it. So we know that they're actually blackmailing someone. They found the rug that was used in the woodland, the very, very opening scene with the grunting. And then before you know it, they're sitting down to tea, knock on the door, and are both killed outright. So savagely.
Yeah, and there's quite a little interesting bit of trivia here. In some of the later scenes, you see the detectives in the later scenes and they're only talking about Iris's murder because in the original book that this episode is based on, Dennis isn't murdered. He goes into a catatonic state. He's so upset about his mother's death and they kind of had thought that's what they were going to film, but then they added Dennis's death to the script later. So there is some odd bits where you just see them talking about Iris and not Dennis, which is quite odd given that it was a double murder. But then they went back and retroactively killed off Dennis too. Gruesome murder. Gruesome murders. I wonder, you know, putting on my little pedantic hat, the person who did murder them, could they have actually done that? Did they have the body strength to do it? I don't know. Nikki, I think that maybe that's a plot hole.
Especially to sever a head.
Yes, that takes a lot of rest.
Yeah, and there'd also be a lot of blood everywhere as well, which we know the afternoon tea has been laid out. It would have been ruined. Your sandwiches and your sombrero cake would have been ruined. In Midsummer Murders Mayhem, we like to bring in the experts. Sometimes we have our in-house mortician. Other times we chat to people who are involved behind the scenes. Today, we're really excited to have the actress Emily Mortimer, who played Catherine Lacey. Emily was born on the 6th of October 1971 in London. She studied English literature and Russian at Oxford University. And while appearing in an Oxford University student production, she was spotted by a TV producer who cast her in an adaptation of Catherine Cookson's The Glass Virgin. She later made her feature film debut in 1996 alongside Val Kilmer in The Ghost and The Darkness and is now a household name around the world. I started off by asking her to explain her role in the episode.
I played Catherine, a frustrated actress who was in an incestuous affair with my own brother. I was responsible for the death of four people, including myself and my brother, in a suicide pact. So it was very dramatic and intense, my episode.
But how did you get this role in the first place?
I think I just auditioned in the usual way. It was one of my very first jobs. So it's kind of a sweet symmetry that the first ever episode of Midsummer Murders was also right at the very beginning of my acting career. And kind of a first for me too. Gosh, 30 years maybe has gone by since I did that. It shot very near where my parents' house is in Oxfordshire, so I went home to my mum and dad every night and regaled them with stories of all the people I'd killed that day and all the terrible things I'd done. And I also remember thinking it was very kind of risque to make a show about incest at that time, to make a kind of, you know, entertaining crime drama about incest, and part of the show's magic, I think, is that it deals with quite intense things, but in this kind of bucolic, cozy setting. Anyway, it was a taboo subject then for a television drama, and I think it still is. I don't really feel like that's a subject that's dealt with very much on television or even in movies, and so it's still kind of a little bit radical as an episode.
My goodness. I would certainly agree with that. Now, was there anyone that you really enjoyed working with on it?
I loved working with Julian Glover, who played the rich man in the wheelchair whose wife I murdered and who I then married. And also Daniel Casey and John Nettles, of course. They all had such good senses of humour and were so fun. And Jonathan Firth, great actors, all of them. It was such a nice atmosphere.
Well, you mentioned about your parents living near Oxfordshire. How about living in the county of Midsummer? Do you think you'd want to move there?
I'd love to live somewhere near my parents' house where I grew up. I'm many thousands of miles away in New York, so I'm really nostalgic and sentimental about that part of the world. And so, yes, I think I would consider Midsummer as an option for a county to live in. But I would just have to have John Nettles on speed dial, I guess, in case anything went wrong or anyone got sort of bumped off.
I think we'd all like John Nettles on speed dial, wouldn't we? But finally, Emily, in the episode, you were killing off people. But do you have a perfect murder weapon in mind for real life?
I don't think there's any such thing as the perfect murder, so that's my two penny worth. I don't think anyone should go about thinking they can commit the perfect murder because they can't.
Absolutely. That was the actress Emily Mortimer, who played Catherine Lacey in The Killings at Badger's Drift. There's some brilliant character actors in this episode to kick us off.
Yeah, I mean, we've covered some of them. Richard Kant, who played Dennis Rainbird, phenomenal stage and screen actor. And Elizabeth Spriggs, who plays his mother, Iris Rainbird. Younger people might know her as the Fat Lady from Harry Potter, the original Fat Lady before she was replaced by Dawn French in the later films. She's just one of those actresses who have been in loads of period dramas as that sort of matronly character. She was in Sense and Sensibility. I love her. I love her voice. I love everything about her. I think she's phenomenal. Like we covered, you have the great Emily Mortimer, Jessica Hines as the Doctor's daughter, Judith. Jessica's a phenomenal comedy actress. Spaced, The Royal Family, Shaun of the Dead, like a proper embedded great comedy actress from Britain in one of her early roles as the young Doctor's daughter.
He was doing my portrait. He only did the first sketches, but they took all day. He said I had a wonderfully complicated face.
If anyone has seen The Royal Family, you'll know Cheryl straight away. She was the best friend that couldn't stop eating. Probably one of the funniest sitcoms ever produced in the UK. A brilliant, brilliant actor.
And also her stepmother, the lady of the evening, as you so lovely put it, Nikki, is played by Diana Hardcastle, who played Rose Kennedy in the Kennedy's miniseries. She was in the Best Exotic Marigold Hotel. She was in The Good Women. She, again, a great British actress who has appeared across your TV screens. It's full of faces you'd recognise. And that's the great thing about Midsummer, is it's just full of those faces that always feel like long-lost family because you've seen them in so many different things. It's now time for your favourite segment of the show, the Midsummer Murder Superfan Face-Off Mega Quiz. With me, your host, Ashley Story. We have Jill and we have Alison. Jill, Scottish, lives in Sheffield. Alison, you're in Berkshire. You're both glamorous ladies. Now, the episode of Midsummer Murders we are quizzing you on today is The Killings at Badger's Drift. It's the first episode. It's a magical one. Now, with any quiz, we need a buzzer. So I need to hear your buzzer noises. Jill, first, what's your buzzer noise? Excellent, Jill. Very buzzy. Alison, what's your buzzer noise?
Burr. I thought I'd go low.
We've got a buzz and we've got a burr. Brilliant.
Yeah, I thought I'd go low pitch.
Makes sense. It is time to start the quiz. Alison, are you ready?
I am ready.
Jill, are you ready?
Born ready.
Brilliant. Here we go. Question one. In what year did the killing at Badger's Drift first air? Oh, Jill was in there first. Jill, sorry, I'll take your answer first.
1997.
Correct. Well done. 1 point to Jill.
Yay.
Oh, I need to be louder on my burp.
Question number two. Joyce, who isn't known for her cooking, is making Barnaby a meal from the Delia Smith cookbook. What is she making for Tom Barnaby?
Burp.
Oh, that is Alison.
Lamb. A lamb dish.
Can I get a specificity?
Oh, it is a... I know that Cully delivers her a chicken ham pie, but it's actually she is cooking a lamb casserole.
Which part of the lamb is she using, Alison?
Oh, I would say thigh or leg.
No, you'd hope so, but Joyce has gone for the neck, the weirdest part of the sheep.
Oh, well, hey, I remember the pie.
Do you know what? I'm going to give you a point. I'm going to give you a point, Alison. You were bang on with the lamb. I was being pedantic.
I remember Cully's pie, the good food.
Right. Question three. What does Dennis Rainbird's personalised registration plate read?
Burp. Burp, burp, burp.
Sorry, Jill. Alison.
So basically, played by Richard Cant, who I met last week, is RIP1.
Ooh, name drop.
Absolutely.
Alison, you're quite right there. Yeah. And if I could give you bonus points for the name drop, I certainly would, but I am not permitted to do so.
Yeah.
Okay, this next question is Midsummer Murder. Kind of like, this is a big overall question. I think this is a hard one. This episode is the first to have a location in its title. How many more episodes of Midsummer Murders have a location in their title?
Ooh.
I'm going to go Jill.
57.
Absolutely not. Nowhere near.
You just need Alison. To go 58.
Well, Murder at St. Mally's is the location. I wouldn't say, I would say less than five.
I want to give Alison the point because she was the closest. It was eight.
Eight?
I wouldn't think, yeah, that many.
Well done, Alison. Right. This is another tough one.
Oh.
Name any three sandwich fillings served by the Rainbirds. Alison with her food. Alison.
Okay. Let's have a look. We've got Iris, and then we've got Dennis's sandwiches. So we've got the fillings are Marmite, anchovy, and we've got Iris's, which is sandwich spread, and potted meat.
You're bang on there, Alison. We were looking for anchovy, salmon spread, Marmite, potted meat, jam, tuna, or sandwich spread. Any of them, you got four. It's the worst spread I've ever heard of, and I have been to funerals in the East End of Glasgow, and that made me feel ill. So well done, Alison.
Not right. Forgetting the ice sombrero.
I was thinking that one.
not forgetting, of course. How could we? Right. Question number 6. How many present day characters are killed in this episode?
Burp.
Alison, straight in again.
Now, you said present day characters because the one you're admitting is basically Bella Trace. So if you take away, because there's, what, 3 suicides, 4 murders, ergo, if there was present, it's got to be 3?
Mm-mm. Jill, would you like to come in and try and steal it?
Go for a steal.
Killed, not murdered. Killed, not murdered.
Ah.
Tricky. Sneaky.
No, Jill. 2. No, you're both wrong. It was 6.
Ah.
Okay. John Nettles made his debut as DCI Barnaby in this episode. Mm-hmm. But what is the name of the final episode he appeared in?
Oh, I do know this.
No. It's 3 words.
3 words, and I'll give you a clue. The word murder is in it.
It's one of those that will go, oh, of course.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
John Nettles' final episode was Fit for Murder.
Of course. I knew it was 3 words.
You were right. 3 words there, Jill. But we don't give points for knowing how many words are in the answer. Right. Question number 8. Finish this Barnaby quip. So you're taking it seriously then, sir? No, Troy. Actually, I'm... blank. Yes, Alison.
Oh gosh, no, yeah, because I'm not taking it seriously. I'm wanting to know what I'm having for my tea or something. No, it's not that.
Oh, so close, so close.
Oh,
he says no. I'm just filling in time until tea.
Filling time till tea. Food in there somewhere. Mean food.
Okay. Question number 9.
Oh, I'm being
Alison. Alison is 5-1 up. Scotland once again being beaten by the English. Chill, what are you doing? We're going to have to start running on the pitch and ripping up the turf if it keeps going this way, Chill. Right. Number 9. Question number 9. It's all to play for. Ooh. Before screenwriter Anthony Horowitz came up with the name Midsummer Murders, what was the show originally going to be called? Yes, Alison.
It was basically Detective Barnaby series. The key word was Barnaby, not Midsummer, by Carolyn Graham.
Yeah, that is it.
Which is why it's the same everywhere else.
You're absolutely right, Alison.
Yep.
Okay, final question.
Oh, I might be able to go to 2.
Oh, here's hoping, Jill. Fingers and toes crossed for you. Now, our favourite character, Cully, the greatest actress in all of Midsummer, she is Tom and Joyce's daughter. But what is she named after?
Oh.
Oh.
I know it's either a place or an island. Sorry.
Do you know...
Yep.
Alison did burp in first. Jill, you were just musing out loud. Alison.
Is it a place in Wales? Or Cornwall?
Absolutely not.
Cornwall.
No, nowhere near. Jill.
There you go.
No, all I was going with was a place or an island. It's like an island or something like that. It's a place where they went on holiday and got the name. And but other than that, where it actually is, I can't remember.
It is named. She is named. Sorry, Cully, our great actress who is always there when a murder's happening, which I find suspicious. She's named after a village in Switzerland on Lake Geneva.
There we go.
Oh,
you were so close with Como.
So close with Cornwall. Then
no, Como.
Right, ladies.
I learned a valuable lesson. Don't eat before the thing if it's all going to be questions about food.
Oh, I thought you were going to say don't eat before it because you'll get a cramp like swimming. Okay, this concludes this head-to-head fan-off quiz. The score of 7-1. Alison, well done. Congratulations. You are super fan. Jill, you tried your best and that's all that matters.
I turned up.
You turned up. Well done, Jill.
I made Alison look good.
Oh, bless you.
I feel like we've all bonded over this quiz.
Thank you,
Alison. Thank you, Jill. You have been amazing. And it was great to talk to you about Midsummer Murders. There's nothing I love more than chatting about Midsummer. And you were both here to do that with me. So I'm grateful to have you with me.
Oh, we're coming to the end of this episode. But let's hear DCI Barnaby and Troy unravel who is behind the murders. When they went in to see the house of Dennis and Iris Rainbird, and they found all these logbooks, everything minutiae, every single name, timing, what people had done in the village. They then realised they might have found out who killed Bella. Now, just to remind everybody, Bella was Henry Tracy's first wife, who was murdered, we now find out, in a shooting accident while they were out shooting in the countryside. So off they go. To arrest Phyllis.
Phyllis Cadell, I'm arresting you on suspicion of the murder of Bella Trace on the 26th of June, 1995. Troy?
You don't have to say anything, but it may harm your defence if you do not mention when questioned something which you later rely on in court. Anything you do say may be given in evidence.
Phyllis?
No, it's all right. Henry, yes, I did it. I'll get my coat.
I mean, how British is that? I'll just go and get my coat. And literally, I'll just finish my cup of tea, get my coat, and I'm now going down for murder. So she goes down, they take her to the prison, but she's being held in a cell. And then sadly, she commits suicide while she's being held for her actions. So it is all sort of, in a way, coming together. All the villagers are pointing towards Michael Lacey that his behaviour is odd and there's more to him than meets the eye. So they try and go in and they actually get a warrant to go into his studio at last to go and look at all his pictures and the artwork that he's been drawing. And with that, Troy finds the knife with blood still on it up in the rafters, because you always look up there first. And flies on it as well, which was a bit like, ooh, gosh, ooh, I don't need that extra bit of goryism.
So they found the knife. We've got Michael arrested. Barnaby's digging through. He knows that something is deeper than this. So he goes to find Nanny Sharp because he knows that she must hold the key to what's going on. And when he meets Nanny Sharp, it uncovers yet more incest in Badger's Drift. That's right. It wasn't just the Rainbirds who were doing kissy mouth together, Nikki. It was Catherine.
Kissy lips.
It wasn't just the Rainbirds doing kissy lips. It was Catherine and Michael, brother and sister.
I almost guessed it when we came here. The three bedrooms and only one bed slipped in. They pulled the wool right over my eye.
Nanny Sharp had caught them right in the act, and they've been up to no good all this time, and it's icky. It's icky. The old Nanny Sharp calls them and lets them know that the police are on to them, because Barnaby says Mary Sharp, the stupid woman, she told them.
She'd actually caught them in the act. That's why she had left. But she still loved them, so she calls Michael and warns him. And then I've never seen anyone run so fast, hotfoots it straight to the house, to Tyre House, where the wedding's going to take place, runs up, warns his sister, and they both just disappear.
That's right. Then Catherine and Michael go to the woods, and like Romeo and Juliet, if they were related and creepy, they end their lives.
Yeah. And you just hear two gunshot noises. So you know that they've taken their own lives. And that's it. It's the end of their romance and their lives. Ooh. I know. I mean, from the beginning to the end. I mean, do you know what? This is such a brilliant episode. Obviously, it was the first one and they wanted it to be impactful. But I really, really didn't see that coming. Mm-hmm. Never. Never, never, never.
It does catch you off guard, Becky.
Join us next time when my American co-examiner Bill Young and I peer into the Dark Secrets episode from the beginning of season 14. The reclusive life of elderly eccentrics William and Mary Bingham comes under police scrutiny when a social services investigator is killed.
What do we know about the Binghams?
They're said to be a bit reclusive. Their two children died way back in a tragic accident. Youngest surviving daughter and her husband run the stud farm part of the state. He's running for local Euro MP, so must be bent.
We're going to be hearing from Neil Dudgeon, a.k.a. DCI John Barnaby, about how he first got into acting.
So I turned up on the first day of rehearsal to do like a little three-line part as a guard or something, and he made me Demetrius in Midsummer Night's Dream, which is a fantastic, hilarious part. And I think that was the point. As a series of sort of punishments and flukes, I then sort of did that and thought, this is really good. I really like this.
And of course, we'll round things off with Ashley Story's Superfan Face-Off.
Midsummer Murders Mayhem is presented by me, Nikki Chapman. A massive thank you to Ashley Story, the wonderful John Nettles, and to our guest, Emily Mortimer. This has been an All Three Media international production with special thanks to associate producers Rachel Blaister and Gary Wool. This series was created by Story Hunter. The executive producer was Kirsty Hunter, produced by Shannon Delwish. The production team was Pam Muir, Annie Abraham, and Reham Moussa.